Off the Ball. GAA.
Probably booing.
Text me last night at 6 o'clock. Any sign of these power rankings? No, Pat. You won't be getting 8 hours to prep to rip me asunder. You'll get to see it the morning of.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus cgamblingcare.ie.
All right, it is getting to squeaky bum time. Cian Fahey, how are you?
Jar, I'm trying to figure out, should we be happy or sad that we had the most Irish backfield I've ever heard in the NFL this weekend, but it was playing for the Las Vegas Raiders, who are about the worst backfield I've ever seen, in McCormick at running back, Sincere McCormick being his full name, and Aidan O'Connell, who got injured and was probably going to get benched anyway. I'm trying to, like, Ireland, the NFL and Ireland are building this relationship right now. I'm not sure if it helped or hurt us over the weekend.
It would be interesting to see if we were to do one of those Olympic-style tournaments where people represent a country, who would end up on the team, a bit like the, wasn't it a rugby league team that had a...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sean Edwards.
Yeah.
Was playing for us and various other...
You take him any day.
Second, third generations. Don't they put, like, the helmet of their kind of, like, all Americans have an origin country? Mm-hmm. They put the little flags on. I don't know if there's the been too many tricolours in that over the years, one or two maybe.
It's optional.
Well, the punter, I suppose, is the
actually,
Green Bay
he's
punter
actually
is the
Irish,
only one who comes to mind. Yeah.
Well, we'd be good at the old kicking and maybe some of the catching. But the running backs and the speed positions, we'd have a little bit of work to do. So is Sincere McCormick any good? I don't know.
He was all right, to be honest. It was Aidan O'Connell who was dragging them down more. So he came out and was doing that whole thing of where you throw one interception and suddenly you think you're throwing to the defenders instead of the receivers. And you just keep throwing the ball straight to defenders. He got hurt, so let's not try and bag at him too much. But in general, he's not really an NFL caliber starting quarterback. It's kind of why he couldn't beat out Gardner Minshew in the first place, I suppose.
I read
the Raiders coaching staff, by the way, that's the most mental coaching staff I've ever seen. Do you guys know Rob Ryan's on there? Like, I thought we were done with the Ryans. I thought they were all gone. He's in part of the defensive coaching staff. Cadillac Williams is coaching the running backs. Marvin Lewis is the assistant head coach. Dewey Gruden, John Gruden's son, after he got fired, apparently he just hung around. He's still on the coaching staff there. And Joe Philbin is the offensive line coach. Remember the Miami Dolphins head coach from a few years ago, where his offensive line coach was done for doing cocaine in the offices of the building, so he got fired. So that coaching staff is mental.
A lot of people who failed in higher positions got to, and maybe Marvin Lewis, that's unfair.
They're on a 9-game losing streak.
But funny enough, you mentioned about the running backs. I read a piece of analysis a couple of weeks ago that I didn't understand, which happens a lot in the NFL. If you go too technical, if you go down to the nerd angle and you realise you don't have a level of understanding at quite their level. But it basically did a breakdown of the running plays, the running offense of the Raiders, and said it's the worst running offense they've ever seen in the NFL. And it's not just the players, although the players are terrible. It's the schemes, it's the blocking, it's the where they run the ball, everything about it. It's just a terrible. And it's funny, since then I've been watching them, and it is run up the middle for a yard and a half every single time without fail.
It seems to not be doing much for them, apart from getting them in the prime position to have one of the first picks, as things stand at the moment.
Them and the Giants?
They sit atop Tankathon. 2-11, them and the Giants for a second. The Patriots are back to being third pick, but they obviously have another game. They're just coming off their bye, yeah?
Yeah, but that's the end of the byes now, though, I think, so everybody's pretty much even. There's a load of teams on 3 wins. So why are the Patriots always the worst of them?
New England, Carolina, Jacksonville, Tennessee, and the Jets, and Cleveland all have 3 wins. So you could catapult yourself from second to ninth in the space of one dodgy interception.
One accidental win.
Somebody not kneeling down at the goal line. We're burying the lead here. The Rams-Bills is absolutely sensational. The Rams still sit outside the playoffs, but if they do make a run, you wouldn't be backing against them.
And they've got the 49ers on Thursday night this week, I believe. The NFC West is very much up for grabs. I believe there's 2 games between the top and the bottom because the Seahawks absolutely dominated the Cardinals at the weekend. Kyler Murray had an early implosion in that game to suggest he's not going to be recovering from it anytime soon because they look like they have major, major problems. So the Rams are suddenly the ascending team there with the Seahawks alongside them. The Rams-Bills, like that game, my God, it was one of the... So, if you didn't sit down and sit through the NFL slate at the weekend, if you missed it, if you're like unlike me, where you've better things to be doing in your afternoon and evening, the early window was just atrocious. Like, you've got Jaden Daniels and Lamar Jackson on their bye weeks. You've got the Detroit Lions played on Thursday night. The Packers played on Thursday night. The Chiefs and the Chargers are playing on Sunday night. So we were left with like all the really, really crap teams, essentially, and not just the crap teams, but the proper boring teams. And then we got to that slate at the, in the afternoon or in the evening over there, I guess, the 4 o'clock games that are actually 9 o'clock over here. And Rams-Bills was just, it was engrossing because the Rams looked like they were going to run away with it. And then the Bills managed to come back. And ultimately, Josh Allen finishes as the only player in NFL history with 3 passing touchdowns and 3 rushing touchdowns. Now, the 3 rushing touchdowns, it's a little bit of nonsense. They're 3 quarterback sneaks. They don't really count. But that's besides the point. The performance he had in that game was incredible. He carried that offense in a way that he's been kind of doing for a lot of this year, but he hasn't done it really. Or sorry, he's done it a lot against like the poorer teams. But when they've come up against the Ravens, for example, they got blown out. They lost to the Texans. They've had a lot of close wins against some kind of underwhelming teams as well in there. But this game was kind of ironically probably his best game of the year, and he ended up losing. When we were coming into this season, I was talking about how I really wanted to see where his career was going to go, the direction it was going to go in this year, because they lost Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis moved on. They didn't look like they had a lot of proper wide receivers there. Khalil Shakir has stepped up. Adding Amari Cooper has helped. But Allen has actually seemingly learned a lot from playing in an offense that's more pared down. His decision-making is so much better this year compared to last year or the year before, where he would have been really reckless with the ball. He's kind of learned that he can't afford to force the ball into tight windows this year because his receivers aren't necessarily going to be able to make those plays. So ultimately, the Rams won out and the Rams were brilliant, but you kind of came away feeling pretty good about the Bills as well because it felt like a proper playoff game.
They did trade up to pick a receiver at the start of the second round who's been completely useless for them, but that's a different story. Normally I would agree with you, quarterback sneaks shouldn't count, but he did also run for 82 other yards, so he's like,
yeah,
this is one of those rare situations where he got them to the goal line and then he decided, I'm going to call my own number here, kids, I'm punching this one in. Screw you, Cook, and all your fantasy owners.
No, 100%. I'm not taking away from the performance. The performance as a whole was brilliant. Like, the way that game played out as well, all the pressure was on him because they weren't running the ball at all. James Cook had about 4 or 5 carries, I think, in the end. Josh Allen ran the ball 10 times for 82 yards, I think. Like, overall, like the other part of this, actually, that we're kind of leaving out is the Bills' defensive line just shut the Rams' pass rush down. And I kind of heard a funny stat during the game. They said the Rams have, I think it was the highest pressure rate on the year, so that means they're getting the most pressure, getting to quarterbacks more often than anyone else. And I found that hard to believe because individually they don't have any standout players. And whenever I watched them, it felt like they're really missing Aaron Donald. And that was a massive part of yesterday's game because they couldn't get pressure on Josh Allen up the middle. So he was able to drop back, sit in the middle of the pocket, survey the defense and make throws. No, he still had to make very difficult plays. He still had to extend plays and escape the pocket. And actually, he had a couple of really, really soft roughing the pass or unnecessary roughness penalties there that went in his favor, that the Rams can feel aggrieved about. But overall, they needed to get that pass rush going and they weren't able to. So you got to give the Bills offensive line a lot of credit. You've got to give Josh Allen a lot of credit. And then, I mean, I've talked so much about the Bills here. Realistically, the Rams won the game. We should be giving them more credit. But that just speaks to how well Matthew Stafford, Kyren Williams and Puka Nacua were. They were outstanding.
Is it just out of the injuries that they haven't had more wins up to this point? That actually there's the bones of a really good team there, but because they're so thin with the cap situation and having no picks for basically a decade, there's no strength in depth. Now when they get their players back, they look really dangerous.
Yeah. It looked like that was the first time that you had Stafford at his best, Nacua at his best, Williams, Cup, all in the same game. And it just shows you what they could do. They score 44 points all of a sudden, you know. Now, those lads will get injured again, you know, or they'll get hurt, yeah, or they'll get whatever, you know. So that is...
I need 2 months now of not...
Yeah, yeah. Well, it hasn't happened yet, but, you know, those players are exceptional. Like Nacua, Keane, like, you know, he was injured all year, so you can't really judge his second year off his first year, but when you see a performance like last night, you realise this guy's the real deal. He can probably do everything a wide receiver. You have wide receivers that are good blockers. You have wide receivers that could run a bit after the catch. You could wide receivers that can go deep and fast and catch a ball. He sort of can do everything a wide receiver should be able to do.
I wonder if
it's funny you say that because I was asked... I was asked last night by one of the people who follow my work in terms of the articles I write each week, and they were kind of going, oh, why don't you write about Puka Nacua? And my response was that he does everything really, really well, so it's actually kind of really boring to write about because there's nothing to break down and pick apart in his game. And the catch he made last night, the toe-touching grab when he was turning in midair, look, when the ball went past, Brady lost his mind at it. His toes were literally just his toes were touching the ground, going out of bounds over the sideline. And he's catching the ball not over his head, he's catching the ball behind his head, so he can't see his hands. And he's just essentially reading the flight of it and then pulling it in while tapping his toes. It's about as good of a catch as you're going to see. I think the other part of what you talked about there in terms of like They're very top heavy, similar to the 49ers. They have those three or four or five stars, and they've got to rely on them. They've got to keep them healthy. But the other aspect of that is, you look at Matthew Stafford. Sometimes you get the Matthew Stafford you had last night, where he's making that audible to the screen to Nacua to beat the Bills blitz that actually gives him the game-winning touchdown, and you're getting the best of him over and over and over again. And then sometimes you have the games where it looks like he's physically not where he needs to be, and that's just a factor of him being that old. Maybe it's shots, I don't know, maybe he's getting painkillers or whatever, or maybe it's just age, and some weeks he feels better than other weeks, you don't really know. When he's on it, when he's on form, he's essentially unplayable with Nacua and Kyren Williams there. And Cooper Kupp, who seems to be getting a step back, like, he's not putting up the big numbers, but he looks a little bit faster now than needed at the start of the year, which is an unusual thing for a wide receiver. Typically, they slow down as the year wears on rather than speed up.
Cooper Kupp is 31. Maybe he's going to have one of those late careers like Adam Thielen keeps going to 34, 35, because obviously he has the hands and the route running to be able to do it. So we'll see. I do wonder if Aaron Donald comes out of retirement if they do make the playoffs. Like, I wouldn't be terribly surprised.
Really?
Yeah.
Is there talk of that?
Well, I'm just reading an LA Times piece from September there. Apparently he's keeping himself in shape, because he always keeps himself in shape.
Oh, okay, there you go.
So,
I mean, have you seen Aaron Donald? He looks like the kind of guy who does not get out of shape.
He looks like
in his life.
Anthony Joshua, like, you know, he's... Do you remember playing table tennis that time with no top on Hard Knocks? You're like, Jesus, this guy is insane. Looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Josh Allen, MVP, give it to him now.
I don't think so, because, well, if you look at it, Lamar Jackson's numbers across the board are better. I think the other aspect of it is Mahomes is, like, we'll get to him at another point, probably straight away now, though. Like, Mahomes, is the way he's pulling out results with this Chiefs team, I think he's also there as well. I do think he's probably the favourite, but that doesn't mean I think he should be the favourite. He's the favourite because there's a boredom with Mahomes and Jackson. They tend to not want to give it to guys over and over and over again. The other one I would argue for at this point is Saquon, and you saw that at the weekend once again. His value is just consistently through the roof. He's carrying that team in a way that we haven't seen a running back do since maybe Chris Johnson with the Tennessee Titans 15 years ago. So there's definitely competition there, and we've still got quite a lot of time left in the regular season to actually figure that out. So the final weeks will be very important.
Okay. Let's talk then about the Kansas City Chiefs, who obviously benefited the most from the fact that the Bills got beaten. It feels like they're going to end up with the first seed now. The worst first seed that we've seen in a long time?
Well,
or the best?
I'll let Keith do the analysis, because I think there's probably a... I think it ultimately comes down to how do they keep winning. But we should lay out how they've won. I think I have four to hand. They won with... Because Isaiah Lively's foot was a centimetre out of bounds in week one. And that's a generous centimetre. There was two games which you change the channel and you say the Chiefs lost that game. And there were two tap-over field goals. One was blocked. I can't even remember what happened then last week. It was there was another one, the exact same thing, where game's over.
They didn't take it.
They didn't take the field goal.
Wasn't that it? Last week was
the timing. Yeah, the Bears. Was the Bears?
Was it a different game?
They messed up. Someone messed up anyway. In a way, it wasn't quite as bad as the one that was blocked, but it was nearly as bad. And then this week they mishit a field goal to win the game. It hits the post, squeaks over. Like, there are losses in. Not that much has to change in history for them to be four losses and them to be five. What would they be then? 8-5. So, you know, they're obviously fine. They're obviously in all these games and they're doing something. They're definitely holding Kelce back. They're definitely holding Mahomes and something in the offense back.
He's not running.
He is not being protected. He is under pressure every time he has the ball in his hands. And I don't see how that changes come playoffs. I don't see how they suddenly flick a switch and suddenly the left tackle is...
Well,
protecting him a bit better.
I know very little about this, but what happens is if he starts to run, that suddenly you can't rush because you're like, oh, and that split second creates... So at the moment, there is no option that he's going to run. You know he's not going to run. Because unless you absolutely force him to, he's going to try and protect himself until the postseason, when he will put every single limb at risk of breaking. So I think that's the bit that transforms the offensive line a tiny bit. Now, I don't know if it fixes it, but... That's one aspect of it.
Yeah, it takes away the balance of the pass rush, essentially. So if you're a defensive end going against Patrick Mahomes right now, you know the spot you need to get to. It's right in the middle of the pocket. It's 6 or 7 yards behind the center, and it's going to stay there for the most part. He'll move around a little bit. But what happens once he starts running and scrambling in the playoffs, now that point is always moving. You're constantly wondering where you're trying to get to. So if you make an aggressive move to get to that spot, but Mahomes has actually gone into the right flat, it's much easier for the right tackle to push you into the direction you're already going than it is for him to push you away from the direction you're already going. So if that makes sense, you get to use the defensive line's momentum against them. The games you're thinking about there, Mick, they scraped past the Carolina Panthers last week with a field goal at the end of the game. They went to overtime with the Buccaneers about a month ago. But the recurring theme here as well is they've not really beaten anyone strongly. They're winning games by a field goal. They're winning games by a touchdown. They're scraping through games. And now, like you mentioned there, is this the best team or the worst team, or how do you define this team? And it really does come down to your perspective, because the way this has worked for all this season so far is Mahomes reaches a point in the game where it's like, right,
yeah,
our offense isn't working. I need to turn this on and I need to win the game for us. And that is essentially what happened last night. The field goal went in off the upright and off the left upright and bounced across, and it was all this dramatic thing and blah, 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 blah. It was a third and long anyway. Once you get to third and long, it's all the same thing, really, because they're still trying to get the ball down the field. And he had a great throw down the left sideline to, I think it was Hopkins who dropped the ball. And like, so ultimately, the only people stopping Mahomes are the Chiefs players, and that's the level he's at. And we've got to this stage with him where we probably don't appreciate him enough, and that's natural because you have someone around as long as you have them around. It gets boring to keep talking about how great he is. Mm. But he's literally just a cheat code, and we can't really break it down any further or explain it any further. If you stack a team on the other side of the ball, and if he's fully healthy, he's still going to find a way to win that game. So it's kind of like, remember back in the day when Usain Bolt was able to beat anyone he was running against, even the best sprinters in the world, and he'd run just far enough to beat everyone around him. He didn't need to overextend himself. That's what it feels like when you're watching this Chiefs team. It's like, all right, we've got a minute and 20 to get a field goal to win the game. All right, I'll do that. I haven't been able to move the ball for the last two quarters, but it's a minute and 20 left and I need a field goal, so I'll go and get it. So you're at a stage where you've got Andy Reid, you've got Patrick Mahomes, the rest doesn't seem to matter that much. They'll figure it out is basically how it's gone so far. And I can keep doubting them and I'm keep going logically, this can't last, this shouldn't last, but we've seen it last and it probably will continue to last because that's so good there.
Yeah, I was thinking of the wrong third down, the one to Hopkins is a different one. The third and eight I meant was the one that, like, to keep the game alive, shorter field goal to Kelce, and suddenly it's like, right, when you need it most, Mahomes makes the play, Kelce comes out of nowhere, having done nothing, and that's the argument in favour of them. Because in the playoffs, they'll need them the whole game.
Yeah.
Whereas in the regular season, you need just enough to win and sneak over the line and keep everybody wrapped in bubble wrap.
I think until they stop winning, you have to keep thinking they're going to win.
Yes.
In the playoffs. Like, because they've done it now so often since he's reached this point of being as good as he is.
I know.
And so consistently. It's like the Patriots.
This is what I was going to say about the Patriots, though, is like, that was an insane run for the Brady years and so on. And they were in the AFC Championship game almost every year. If they weren't, they were in the divisional game the week before, right? And there was so many different types of seasons in that time. There was the, you know, 17-0 or 16-0. And then there was years when they snuck by and they were winning all these close games and they were going 12-5 and so on. And most often it caught up with them. You know, they'd play Denver in the playoffs and they just didn't have it. They weren't able to pick it up. They weren't able to lift themselves. And they didn't win Super Bowls that year. You know what I mean? They were there or thereabouts and they were the team to beat because of the history. And ultimately, they were the hardest hurdle for you to overcome on your way to the Super Bowl.
And that's the scenario.
But they didn't have it. Yeah. And I'd be worried about, if I was a Chiefs fan, having seen history in all those Patriots years, I'd be concerned that they could just suddenly turn it on in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're a Chiefs fan,
despite the fact that they're, what, 11-1, 10-1?
Life is pretty good. They're actually, they're 12-1.
To put further context on last night's game as well, like the Chargers, we look at the Chargers, they're a good team. They had the pass rush last night. When the Chargers were beating the offensive line, the Chiefs offensive line, Mahomes and Reid just adjusted the play calling. All right, we're going to a short passing game and that's going to work and that's going to move the ball for us. We'll get field goals, we won't score touchdowns, but it'll keep the offense moving. That's the kind of high level of adaptability they've got. But to put the further context on it, J.K. Dobbins and Ladd McConkey are essentially the only two Chargers who have any bit of speed. Both of them were out last night. Justin Herbert was like just being strangled throughout the first half. He made some exceptional plays and they broke some plays open in the second half to get some touchdowns and get to the 14 points and then ultimately kick that field goal to try and take the lead and win the game at the end. But they were absolutely struggling through that. So the Chiefs aren't scraping past the good teams. Like when we're talking about this and we're talking about it every single week, I imagine our listeners at home are kind of going, oh God, they're talking about this again. But you kind of have to, because they're scraping past bad teams and they're supposedly the best team in the league. Yeah. It's just baffling baffling. It's so frustrating from the Chargers' point of view, who've now lost to the Chiefs twice this year to a total of 9 points, I think it is.
Well, they've won 12 games. Only two of the games were two-score games. Every single other of the... So 10 of the games that they've won have been one-score games.
Unbelievable.
And the teams
that lot of them are field goals too, not even touchdowns.
The teams that they beat by two scores were the 49ers and the Saints. You know, not good teams this season, as it turns out. Okay, let's move on, because the Lions-Packers seems like a while ago at this stage, but the Lions also actually have a better record now than the Chiefs, according to Tankathon. So they are technically the one seeds of all of football, the best team in football as things stand. I guess both teams are pretty happy coming out of this, in a way.
Yeah, I think there's one massive talking point, and that's kind of the reason this game is still so relevant, even though it was on last week. We've talked about Dan Campbell throughout the year and him going for it in fourth down, and I'm not sure if you saw the fourth quarter of this, but early in the fourth quarter, he went for it when he had a three-point lead on his own 30, I think, fourth and one, and they got stopped, and the Packers went and scored and took the lead. But then he got into field goal range. The offense got into field goal range and kicked the game-winning field goal, and there was 1:30 left on the clock, in and around 120 or 140. I can't remember exactly the specifics of it, but either way, if they kicked the field goal, the Packers would have had more than a minute to go and get their own field goal to kick and win the game. And Campbell, instead of kicking the field goal, went for it on fourth and short again. And this is a massively controversial thing, because the old school idea here is you kick the field goal, you take the points, you don't mess around and try and be too smart. And funnily enough, when the play began, Jared Goff stumbled and fell, and it looked like it was going to be a disaster, but he did get the ball off and they did convert, and that allowed them to take the remaining 60 plus seconds off the clock and kick the field goal with nothing left. Now, I'm unsure about this, and I'm always kind of happy when I'm unsure about something when it comes to the NFL, because it means it is a legitimately controversial and difficult thing. I can understand the thought process from him. He's looking at Jordan Love on the other side of the field, who's had a great game to that point. He was a very difficult quarterback to stop in those situations, and he's thinking Jordan Love only needs 35 yards to win this game against my defense that's missing Aiden Hutchinson, although it's been a relatively good defense without Aiden Hutchinson. I want to keep the ball, I want to win the game, and I want to believe in my offense because my offense is the better side of the team. But I also look at it going, it's just naturally, it feels like such an unnecessary risk. It feels like take your 3 points, get your lead, and see if your offense can stop them. Because even if they get down, they still have to make their field goal, and so many things can go wrong. I just don't know philosophically, like, should we still be going for it this often? Should he be given out to for going for it deep in his own territory, but then credited for going for it at the very end of the game deep in the Packers' territory when he didn't need to? It all feels a bit, I'm aggressive for the sake of being aggressive, but it's working for them. So it's kind of hard to argue against, isn't it?
Once you stick to your identity, isn't it? So it's like if the Lions are doing that great, if some under pressure coach is trying to do something, so that he doesn't get Riverboat Ron changed the entire season around by deciding to go for it, that's slightly different. But I suppose it's just like when you do it because you feel like the media want you to or the fans want you to, but it's not actually how you believe what you believe. That's when I think coaches get themselves in trouble. You know,
well, in that instance, right, where you're talking about that, they're not committed to the decision; they're doing it, and you can't communicate that to your team in a way that has credibility. But I think that if you decide that there are periods where you're going to make a heap of all your winnings and risk it, like there's a joy to that. And I think the only other thing about this is like the fact that somebody doesn't do the same thing all the time would suggest that it's not just a pre-planned idea. I get what you're saying, right? So
the identity, I think their identity is a team that goes for it. It doesn't mean they have to go for it in every circumstance. Yeah,
exactly. And I think... I would love to be a fan of that team.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you want. We feel alive, right? We don't need to feel alive right now. We're risking everything for nothing. The win is so sweet.
And it's fair to say that Dan Campbell is 100% the coach of the year so far. And we came into this season and we were saying this, like the Lions play, 14 games in domes. So we knew they were going to have these big outputs and these big score lines and look really, really good. And this is the thing with the trap we have to avoid falling into, because for the last few weeks, I've been buying into them as the best team in football. But that game last week actually made me go, oh, wait a minute, this was actually why I didn't actually love this team. And this is why I was skeptical about this team, because Jared Goff's frailties really showed up once again. As soon as the Packers were able to get him off his spot, he was doing nothing. He was offering them nothing. He was struggling so much to throw off platform. And that's the kind of thing, once you get to the playoffs, these defenses are going to game plan you better. They're going to get that pressure on you. That's when Mahomes elevates his game and starts running around, whereas Goff can't do that. And if the Packers actually had a proper number one receiver, because Christian Watson had a huge fumble and had an another drop, I think they would have probably won that game, and we'd be kind of not talking about Dan Campbell's four going for it and four down and stuff like that. We'd be talking about, have the Lions lost a little bit of their momentum or whatever we want to put it, because overall the offense actually didn't play that well despite putting up so many big numbers.
Yeah, the counter argument to that is they've got Penei Sewell and they've got those two running backs, and that'll get them into almost any game at some level. And all you need from Goff from that point is a few little screens and occasional deep balls, and he's got a brilliant receiving core that they won't make those drops that Watson made. So
they're likely going to stay in the dome as well. If they can hold off the Vikings,
yeah,
they're going to be there all the way to the Super Bowl, you know. And that by the way, is one of the most remarkable things. There's a chance that they could play three games outdoors in the entire season. And by the way, they're in a division where they have to play in Green Bay and Chicago, so that's two games automatically. So the rest of their schedule allowed them one outdoor game. Everyone they played in
Super
division
Bowl of Vegas.
They happened to be the, so they say in the, I think they played the NFC East, they played in Dallas, and they played I don't even know exactly, but all their away games happened to be in the dome places, and all their home games were against the outdoor teams. It was just a very, very weird situation.
We should talk about Sam Darnold, his coming out party.
Oh yeah, I have him written down here.
Sam Darnold's very good.
Five touchdowns.
Sam Darnold, did you know this? He's younger than Joe Burrow. Did you know that? No one ever mentions this.
Joe, you know, he's a year older than Bo Nix.
I mean,
the rookie quarterback.
I'd be taking Sam Darnold's career now if I was Sam Darnold instead of Bo Nix. He's getting paid probably next season. He's getting a lot of money next season.
That's
well, that's the interesting part, because the Vikings aren't necessarily committed to it, because they've got JJ McCarthy there. But there was a report this week that they're not even talking to him about a contract extension right now, which is probably smart on their end because of his whole career trajectory so far. But in terms of talent, yeah, unbelievable. Like, you look at some of the throws he made to Jordan Addison for those touchdowns are phenomenal, and it's never been a question mark with Darnold. The massive touchdown to Justin Jefferson where he made the defensive back turn around and they blew the coverage. Like, again, that's another play where Darnold gets crushed as he's releasing the ball, I believe, and you just see the arm talent allows him to get the ball down the field. The Vikings team, like, they're just on a level that the Falcons weren't. Like, you had two quarterbacks there who, in theory, like, if you were arguing this without thinking about the performances of recent times or thinking about the performance from yesterday, you wouldn't necessarily come in and say Sam Darnold is 10 times better than Kirk Cousins. You'd probably say, to be honest, you'd probably say Kirk Cousins is much better than Sam Darnold if you were looking at it prior to this year. But overall, they're probably two similar quarterbacks. But you just saw a Vikings team that's supremely well coached, a Vikings team that's very talented on both sides of the ball and has those superstar talents on offense to make the offense go. And Darnold is right at the center of that this year. So we've kind of got up and down with him. He's had a couple of bad games recently, and the question marks have come. The Jaguars game has stood out for a few weeks now. So maybe this helps wash the think of that a little bit off him, but he needs to put together a couple more of these in the running now to make sure the Vikings stay on track to be a top seed in the NFC and potentially make the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, see, this is what I have written down here, is that my sense this morning from the Sam Darnold thing, it's not to say it's fool's gold, like we've said all season, or that he's going to turn into a puppet, or that it's the real deal. It's not. I still think it's an unknown, right? But I'm so interested, because I think the one known now is that whether it's Minnesota who take him, or whether what's more likely is they let him go to free agency and the Raiders or the Saints or one of these teams that need a quarterback go and pay him a fortune. And there's such a chance for, like, a Nick Foles situation, or, you know, you pay this guy, you give a 5-year contract, a new franchise quarterback, and it turns out he's actually the Sam Darnold of 2022 and not the Sam Darnold of 2024, and you can never rediscover that again. He never gets back to it. And you know that there's certain franchises, for example, if the Raiders do take him, if the Jaguars happen to need a quarterback, the Giants, right? Where you just know it'll go wrong. You just feel like it before it even happens. And it's going to be the whole summer where this guy signs and he's the hope, and everybody knows deep down this is going to be a disaster.
I think that there's probably a load of scenarios where it could actually work out for him if he was to go somewhere where the coaching ticket, it have made a song and dance about trying to get him, and they're doing what Minnesota did and a little bit what if he's in the right coaching tree.
He needs another thing I just should say, we should always watch when we're trying to analyze a quarterback, and Keane does that better than me and certainly most people, right? But he has Justin Jefferson, you know, and that even is to say that Addison made all the big plays yesterday, right? But there's a reason that Addison is so open, is because he's got the best receiver, or 1A of the best receivers in the game on the other side, and he takes up all the attention, and Jefferson still manages to get his stuff in and gets his touchdown and gets all his yards and big catches on third down and stuff like that. So it's like, not every team has a Justin Jefferson, and that's not to say that Darnold needs it. He's got the arm. He can make plays elsewhere. But we saw last year, we saw the Bengals backup, whose name even escapes me. It was amazing
when he came off the bench.
He's Jamar Chase.
Browning?
Yeah, he's got Jamar Chase there. You know what I mean? It's like, not every team has these players. And, you know, maybe you go to the Raiders and you use Bowers, and that's okay. And that's, you know,
Both teams do have one good receiver.
There was one team that was mentioned there. I'm not sure if it was you, Jar, or Mick that mentioned them. The New York Giants have a wide receiver who is of that caliber, but they also have a head coach there currently. He might not be there at the end of the year, but Brian Daboll has previously worked with a supremely athletic, erratic quarterback in Josh Allen in Buffalo to great effect. He knows how to build an offense generally. I think that would be kind of the ideal fit if he was to leave Minnesota. Now, we're getting ahead of ourselves. He hasn't left Minnesota yet. Obviously, they might franchise tag him and let him start ahead of J.J. McCarthy again next year for a couple of months.
That's the right thing to do, isn't it?
Probably, depending on McCarthy's... Yeah. But then again, the franchise tag for a quarterback right now must be something insane. 60, but that'll
be fine.
That'll be fine
for one season. The first season you do it, it's fine. Like, that would be totally fine for 1 year.
It is, because you've got a quarterback and a rookie...
Yeah,
the only problem with that I would have is you've got a quarterback on a rookie wage scale there for 4 years, and you're into the second year then with McCarthy, and then you're getting rid of all the benefits of that. So, like, realistically, if you're going to start McCarthy, you want to take that extra 40 or 50 million and bring in a bunch of free agents and whoever else you want to trade for, and build the team up so it's actually at its best straight away. You know?
You would have said exactly the same thing about Jordan Love. They made him wait, and then even his first season, they didn't commit to him properly, and they gave him that kind of middle of the road 2 year deal with an out, and then he's just vastly outplayed that, and he is going to cost an absolute fortune the next time his deal gets done. So I think if you don't play them
during your rookie deal, you could probably afford them next time because they haven't proven themselves.
Jordan Love, 26, you know, so the ages here. Joe Burrow, 27. He's 28 tomorrow.
Sorry, is Patrick Mahomes 29? Maybe he's
Darnold's
just turned
27
30
this summer.
We're talking like he's finished.
Jordan Love is 26 and Bo Nix is 24.
Mahomes, I think, is still in his 20s.
Bo Nix played for Ole Miss in college, I believe, before transferring to Oregon. So he essentially had, I think, a 5-year college career, which was one of the big knocks against him, and which is one of the big surprises when he went in the first round of the draft, because everyone kind of assumed, get yourself an Anthony Richardson who's 20. Don't get yourself a Bo Nix who's 24, because you're losing 4 years in his career if everything works out perfectly. But of course, that's kind of that long-range thinking that not every NFL coach really has, and probably shouldn't have, because they all get fired so quickly.
Well, but would you rather Richardson now, or would you rather Bo Nix now?
Richardson, easily.
Why? this year, you're trying to win this year?
The talent level. I mean, Bo Nix, so whenever I've watched Bo Nix
they benched him.
But that's because they're a bad coaching staff. So I look, Carolina Panthers benched Bryce Young. Look what he's done for the last month. So my thought process with Bo Nix, and look, the age thing isn't really the factor here. My thought process with Bo Nix is he does a lot consistently well. Everything he does is like average to above average. He does nothing spectacularly well. He does nothing at an elite level. I much prefer a young quarterback who's making loads of mistakes, but also doing loads of incredible things that gives you the potential of what he could become, because then you can develop that. Whereas the best case scenario for Bo Nix is, oh, you've got Andy Dalton for the next 12 or 15 years. And I'm like, yeah, I can win with that. But I need to be better than the team I'm playing at every other position every single week for me to win with an average quarterback. I can't win with a Derek Carr. I can't win with an Andy Dalton. But you can win a lot more with someone who turns into Cam Newton, someone who turns into the freak Josh Allen, for example. And now I say that as someone who did not like Josh Allen, who wasn't a big fan of Josh Allen. Yeah. So
but weren't
there is
Josh Allen and Cam Newton
thing.
Weren't Josh Allen and Cam Newton Josh Allen and Cam Newton in year one or year two at least? You know, Josh Allen wasn't as good as he is now, but you could see, remember we were only talking about that draft last week with the five of them. Josh Allen was the surprise one who you were like, oh, he's got something. And maybe he was still a rookie, he still had to learn, but you knew they were going with Josh Allen. Cam Newton certainly was. Cam Newton was MVP in his second year, I think, or maybe third year.
I think people kind of remember Cam's first game where he had 400 passing yards and he hit Steve Smith down the sideline in two games. But Cam was very much developing after that point during his rookie year. He very much looked like a rookie for the rest of that time. So I'm 100% like, the argument here for me
first
is like, give
years,
quarterbacks a year. Give them 2 years, you know. Don't rush them and force it. But if you've got someone who shows off elite traits and elite talent, run with that. Don't settle for the guy who's going to get you to 7-9 quickly or 8-8 quickly, you know.
Okay, we're running way over time here, but let's have a bit of a drive.
That's not like us.
You mentioned your boy in the Panthers-Eagles game, and Bryce Young, it turns out, is very good.
They should have won that game, the Panthers.
Yeah, Xavier Leggett dropped the poster out at the end of the game, and it was it wouldn't have guaranteed them the win. It would have put them ahead with, I think, a minute left or whatever it was on 3rd and 8 or whatever it was. The thing with Bryce Young, he's got his confidence back over recent weeks, and he's making throws from clean pockets consistently. And I've actually got this big video I've been working on when I've been off, and it's going to publish tomorrow, where it goes through all of his plays from the last month or two. And you can't blitz him right now. So every team, every time they try send 5 or send 6 after him, he's finding the answer straight away. He's getting the ball there. Adam Thielen converted, I think it was a 4th down yesterday late in the game, and he ran a deep out route against the cover 0 blitz. A cover 0 blitz means you blitz everyone except for the guys who are covering the wide receivers one-on-one, so there's space everywhere. And Young has seen that play now 3 times in the last 3 games, and he's hit Adam Thielen on an out route every single time for the 1st down, and he's done so automatically. He's playing at a speed and at a level mentally that defensive coordinators can't keep up with. And this was always the sales pitch with Bryce Young. It was, he's a short guy, he's a small guy, doesn't have a big arm, doesn't run really fast like Lamar Jackson, can't run over people like Cam Newton. So it's really easy to write him off and get bored of him. And you see him having to jump up to make some passes and stuff like that. But the other side of it was, he's got a brain that is just on a level above everyone else. He's got a composure that pressure does not bother him. He'll take hits as much as any other quarterback in the league. The big guys who get all the credit for taking the big hits all the time, even though he's smaller than them, he'll stand in strong against defensive ends who are landing on top of him, hitting him in the chest as he's delivering the ball. And he's got this incredible awareness of everything that's happening around him. This guy is like, people forgot way too quickly how this fella has superstar potential. And I know he had a bad start to this year, but if you go back through all of his games over the course of his career now, he's up at about 20. I'd say he's played actually maybe 4 bad games in his whole career. He's just been on really bad teams. And now that the team around him has gotten a little bit better, Adam Thielen is healthy, Jalen Coker has developed, Xavier Leggett, while he's dropped a couple of passes yesterday, he shows you how he can get open, whereas a guy like Jonathan Mingo previously couldn't get open. Okay. And the offensive line there has gotten a lot better with Chuba Hubbard in the backfield as well. So the Panthers are 100% on the way up. I think it's a little bit too late for them to like be a factor at the end of this year. But the fact that they could go toe-to-toe with the Eagles compared to what we were seeing from them at the start of the year, massive, massive turnaround.
Kirk Cousins' $100 million contract suddenly looks like a bit of a millstone around the neck of the Falcons, who have already picked his replacement. So do we see...
They picked his replacement 6 weeks after they signed Cousins. It was a very strange thing so soon. And obviously he's coming off an Achilles, but now is the time when you're coming off the Achilles that you should be starting to find your form, not the other way around. You know, he's had, you know, 12 games or 13 games or whatever. I think Cousins is finished. Looks, seems to me anyway.
He hasn't thrown a touchdown in the last 4 games. He's thrown 7 interceptions in that time. He did again that thing that I keep harping on about, where he stares down the receiver, pats the ball, and throws it to the defender again this week for his 1st interception. He threw 2 yesterday. He should have had a 3rd. They need to do what the Steelers did. They're in contention in the division. They've got their starter in. Their offense is, in theory, working because they've won a lot of games. But they've gone from 6-4 to 6-7, I think, or 6-8, whatever they are right now. I'd put Phoenix in. Get him in. Let him play. Let him learn, because he's not going to do anything worse than what Cousins is doing for you right now. And he should. Like we talked about with Mahomes earlier, that athleticism, that ability to move, that part that comes into the game, that opens up opportunities for Bijan Robinson, that opens up opportunities in the play calling. Just do it, because what have you got to lose?
They're 4-game losing streak at the moment. But they are still on the verge of the wild cards. So they're on 6-7. And at the moment, Tampa Bay are going to qualify with a 7-6 record. And they've actually on a 3-game winning streak.
Yeah, Tampa have had a very easy run of things. And they've lost 2 games to Atlanta. So they're going to lose the tiebreaker on that one. So they need to get a couple of games ahead. Can we just mention, while we're on the NFC South very, very briefly, the Saints, and you mentioned it was in a terrible early window, so we all saw a good bit of this game against the Giants, where they nearly threw it away against Drew Lock. Like, Derek Carr went out of that game injured, trying to hurdle his own player on, it was either 1st or 2nd down, it wasn't even 3rd down, trying to get a 1st down. He tried to hurdle his own player, landed out of bounds, didn't get the 1st down, on his arm, looks like he broke his arm, walked to the locker room. I don't know what it ended up being, but it was one of the stupidest play I've ever seen a quarterback do in 20 years odd of watching the NFL. It was absolutely brain dead stuff.
They're on 5-7.
Yeah, they're not even out of that division.
No.
Exactly. And they're playing a very beatable team next week. I can't remember who it is.
You said that's one of the most stupidest plays you've ever seen. Is it worse than the 3 times, I think, now in his career he's ended a season by throwing the ball away on 4th down when they needed a 1st down?
There's a pattern of repeat behavior there. The Steelers still going very strong and looking like a team who know what their identity is. They're at 10-3. Russ obviously cooked last week as this game wore on, cooked again a little bit, but just enough to manage the game, and their defense looks like it's for real.
Yeah, George Pickens was inactive, so it kind of curtailed the passing game a little bit. They struggled early on, but it's a good Browns defense. Miles Garrett was incredible as usual. Mike Williams came in, made a few plays, got called for offensive pass interference a couple of times as well. So he's still figuring out how he's going to fit in this offense and work with Russell Wilson. I think the main story of this game, though, I went into it actually writing about James Winston and focusing on him during the early window, because I was like, oh, Jameis, bit of chaos up against TJ Watt and the Steelers defense. That should be chaos. And the Steelers just played such good coverage and they played such a contained pass rush that even Jameis had to be kind of like limited in what all the crazy things that he tried to do. He threw an interception on a screen pass. He threw an interception on an overthrown seam route. The Steelers kind of took the Browns' identity away from them and forced Jameis to play in this box. And it was just such an impressive performance from a defense that right now is like, I know we talk about TJ Watt a lot, but we don't talk about the wider group there enough. We probably should talk about them more, but not right now for at the end of the pod. But like as a team, as a group unit, they're incredibly good, incredibly impressive, and they won't be down with the greatest defenses in the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers, but that's just because of how high that bar is with the Pittsburgh Steelers specifically. If they were part of another franchise, you'd probably be talking about this as one of the best defenses this team is, that franchise has ever had. With the Steelers, they might be top 10 if they're lucky.
Finally, confirmation through that Aaron Sexton, the former Ulster and Ireland Sevens rugby player, is part of the official international player pathway. I think there's only 15 people who get selected for this. And I think the kickers are all separate. But he's because he comes through the IPP, he'll be allowed to join the practice squad in the same way that Louis Rhys Samet was last year. So he's the latest young Irish person to try and make it in the NFL. And that would be pretty good. Anything else?
Let's hope he doesn't go to the Raiders and plays in that backfield, because then things might get really bad for him.
George Kittle, very briefly.
Oh, yeah.
What a season George Kittle is having. What a wasted season George Kittle is having.
God, he was a joy to behold in the first quarter or so last night anyway, when you're just seeing George Kittle as absolute best. But Purdy makes a big difference, Ger. Would you be getting rid?
Purdy? I know, you've got to stick with it now.
It's not guaranteed, though, as you were saying last week.
I was kind of pissed off watching that game, because he had 130 plus yards at halftime, and I was looking at the record for a tight end was 212 with Shannon Sharp in 2002, and you're kind of thinking to yourself, why don't you just go for that? You've got nothing going on. You're already three scores up against the Bears. Feed him the ball. You've got nothing else going on in this season. I know technically you're still in it, but he could have had 250, 300 yards in that game, I feel like.
Did you see Saquon and mic'd up there about 6-7 weeks ago? He was on, hey, yeah, you need 17 more yards for your most ever in a game. And he was like, let the young ones have a go. It's like, I'm all right. Don't need to be breaking records.
And he just broke the record. 2 weeks later, he broke that record.
He's heading, by the way, we shouldn't sleep on that. Like, I mean, he's heading for the rushing record that's held by Dickerson, isn't it? Like, from the 1980s?
Yeah,
didn't Chris Johnson take it over?
He's heading for Dickerson's. Maybe Johnson's is unattainable or so. So they mentioned
actually,
it last
no, sorry. I think you're right, Dickerson. I think it is Dickerson. I think Chris Johnson is just the most recent to go over 2,000 yards.
Yeah.
I do think he'll probably get it. Now, it'll be a debate depending on, like, the extra game makes a big difference there, I think. But regardless, like, what he's done this year.
Dickerson,
like,
probably only played 40 and it was so long ago.
2,105 yards, Eric Dickerson in 1984 with the LA Rams. That's the greatest.
How many carries?
No. Oh, I don't know.
How many carries did he have? Because if he played, like, 10 games, he still might have had, like, 450 carries, because back then, like, all they did was running backs into walls.
Yeah, maybe it should be carries, not maybe that should be the record. All right, Cian, Mick, good stuff. Same time next week. Take care.
Cheers.
Thank you.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.